listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
And welcome to Nerds Assemble episode 191. I'm Paul.
I'm Emily.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week, it's kind of half talking about what we've been up to, and in my case, talking about the Nintendo Switch.
We are going to interrogate you on the Switch.
Okay. Well, not really okay, but if you say so.
I'm being politely quiet right now.
Okay. So, obviously, I forked out quite a lot of money for the Switch and Legend of Zelda.
Breath of the Wild,
obviously. I did get discount on it through various reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, full disclosure there. Well, our partial disclosure.
Yeah.
Due to his employer. Leave it at that.
Yeah. Although I did go into the other game shop in town today and saw that they're actually selling the Switches for £330, which is a full £60 over retail. Yeah.
So with a game or anything?
No.
Well,
I hope their competitor in the next nearest town isn't being so silly if they've got any stock left.
Yeah, that's if they've got any stock left.
Basically, independent game stores that are, because like the nearest like actual game, as in game, is Penzance now.
Mm-hmm.
Might be one of Cyril's store, or it might be gone now.
Game is struggling to get all their pre-orders out there, aren't they? Quite they haven't actually got any stock.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Mm. Naughty game.
Mm.
It's probably, once again, the whole business model thing, because they're so over-reliant on selling pre-owned stuff.
Yeah.
That they tend not to buy in as much volume the new stock.
True.
Whereas, of course, places like Amazon, that can, they can just say, yeah, we'll do pre-orders, and then we can just, order things. Because, they don't really care, because they don't have the shelf space.
Mm.
Yeah.
Whereas Game are a little bit more paranoid. They want to be able to, just buy things in and then sell it.
Well, it's not just that, but Game have not got the financial clout that Amazon does these days,
in order to
buy in stock because of the administration issues they've had in past years.
Oh, it's not one thing. It's not one issue.
Yeah.
It's the whole combination. But yeah, what you're saying is definitely true with it. And of course, there's the whole pre-order thing and GameSpot in the US.
They do. They seem to be focusing a lot more on PC as well. The last couple of times I've been in there.
I've got a friend in California who wanted to get it on launch but hadn't pre-ordered. Couldn't find any over the weekend.
Oh, no.
Hmm.
Yeah.
See, I hadn't pre-ordered either, but that's because I wanted to kind of go pick it up on the day, and I couldn't guarantee that. A lot of the time now when you're pre-ordering, it's like it's coming through the post, and I'm not trusting the post.
Did we pre-order the Wii U through Amazon?
Yeah, I think we did, to be honest. Okay. And that did come out on that did manage to kind of arrive by
release date.
Yeah, release date.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But I digress.
So, what do we ask him first about? I haven't actually played on it at all, even though it's been in the house all
day. I've shoved one of the controllers into your hand, and you're like, it's quite small.
But
how are you finding the controllers?
Sorry?
How are you finding the controllers?
Not bad. I've only been playing Zelda, and some of the buttons and configurations have kind of made me think, oh, okay. But the controllers themselves, they're actually quite good. Obviously, they come with the little kind of bit on top where you can, obviously, you can separate the controllers out, and there's that slidey bit that kind of extends it up. So when you're actually turning it into two controllers, they actually feel slightly more ergonomical with those kind of clips on.
Cool.
Yeah, because isn't it a sort of a curved shoulder area or something that clips on the top?
Yeah, that's right. And it's got kind of wrist straps on it as well, which is quite cool. Because I've mostly been playing with the Joy-Con grip. And which
makes it look like and feel like a more standard controller that everyone's used to.
It's kind of bizarre how kind of square it is, but you know, it still works. On the odd occasion, I have actually taken the Joy-Cons out and basically played with them just with the Joy-Cons in my hand, and that doesn't.
Sorry,
is this
Nerds After Dark again? Or?
That just
sounded wrong. Did you get the coloured one or the sort of charcoal?
I did get the neon.
You asked me.
Yeah, because I was like, you know, I think I might get the charcoal one because, you know, it's kind of a bit more grown up and whatnot. And Emily was like, no, if you get a coloured one. I was like, okay. If they have the coloured one, then.
I am the person that dreams of tangerine coloured GameCube controllers. I wish I'd managed to get hold of one of those. I really do. I'll just
say, if I had any tangerine GameCube controllers, I'd throw them so hard you'd be able to catch them.
Yay.
Get the hell away from me, that horrible colour.
But obviously you can buy the Joy-Cons
separately as well.
I've noticed that if you buy the separate ones, not that I have yet, but the separate ones are kind of the different coloured. So instead of the left Joy-Con being blue, it's the right Joy-Con that's blue and the left Joy-Con that's red. So strictly speaking, you could probably kind of mix and match them if you get spare kind of colours with it as well.
And have you been playing it mainly on the TV or?
Mostly, but I have actually taken it off and taken it away and kind of played it as well. And
I could do this.
It feels like it's actually quite surprising how big it is. It kind of feels like it's almost like a miniature proper TV, and because it's playing a proper kind of Zelda game on it, it just feels fantastic. It's not kind of a kind of lower down version, like say for example Phantom Hourglass was of Wind Waker, where they had to downgrade the graphics and all that. It's fully kind of proper kind of console kind of game on the move.
Cool.
I got the charging grip with it, which also comes with a USB cable, so I can plug it in to charge the thingies. But I've also got a regular adapter with it as well. So in the box, it comes with one for the dock, I've got a separate one as well that I can take around with me just in case. Say, for example, I'm on the train for more than 3 hours and playing Zelda. Oh, the battery's low. I can still plug it in and play.
Cool. So did you get all these accessories with it, or did you have to pay extra for these accessories?
I had to pay extra for the charge grip and the separate power packet. Obviously, it comes with the one that's with it, but I bought a second one just so that I can kind of take it out on the move and whatnot.
Yeah, because having to unplug the dock all the time would be a nightmare, wouldn't it?
Yeah, especially and I kind of
TV and stuff.
Yeah, I kind of hope that they actually come up with like a mini dock that you can kind of take away and kind of go around a friend's house and plug it into their TV, because while it's quite good with a Kickstarter stand and stuff like that, if you want to show people on the big TV, you don't really want to have to take the main dock with you.
No.
So, that's just something for Nintendo to think about.
Or, third party.
Mad Cats.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Unless there's something weird that goes on in the dock, which I really don't think there is from what I've heard about. Because, you see, I was I was intending to watch Teardown. Someone has already done Teardown for the Switch. And, you know, dock and controllers.
Yeah.
So I was going to watch that, but I've just been very busy.
That's fair. That's fair.
But yeah, I don't think there's anything magic. I'll say that I watched the Digital Foundry comparison between the Wii U Zelda and, you know, the Switch Zelda.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to piss on it at all. I know, it's shocking. But of course, you know, the thing to bear in mind is that this is a game that was in production for the Wii U for years. So it's probably effectively a bit of a kludgy port. But they've said, yeah, it's obviously in higher resolution on the Wii, you know, on the Switch.
Yeah.
When it's docked.
Yeah.
But when you're playing on the native screen, it's more or less the same res. And yeah, it looks very nice, and it ironically it's got me thinking of picking up the Wii U.
Yeah, it is really good. I think you've said this previously, or somebody said this previously, that the Wii U hasn't really gone down in price much since. So you're still kind of looking at about $250 for a Wii U with a game, whereas you're looking at about $270 for the Nintendo Switch by itself.
Although I was looking around and I'm wanting to avoid eBay for various reasons, but the biggest reason is quite a while ago I traded in a load of 360 games at CEX.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So I've got about 120, 130 pounds of credit there. So ideally I would like to see a Wii U in there for about that much, just so I can go effectively free. Thank you.
I swear, like when I was in town at the weekend, CEX and Cash Converters had Wii U's in for about 145 secondhand.
Nice.
There was one on eBay that went unsold over the weekend for 80.
Wow.
So I think there are people that are pretty much dumping.
Yes.
Yeah.
The machine now, which is a bit of a shame, but Nintendo made it very clear that they were, you know, right, this is dead.
Yeah.
We're not going to bother.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Unfortunately so. So once you've got the Joy-Cons onto the screen and that, and it's mobile, how much is it, the same size as the Wii U second screen gamepad, or smaller?
It is.
I'll just say from the pictures, I'm speaking from the perspective of I've not actually held a Switch yet.
Okay, yeah.
But from the pictures, it looks like the machine itself is definitely thinner and sleeker than the Wii U controller.
Yes.
With a bigger screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sharper screen as well. Touch screen also. But obviously you don't need a stylus for it.
It's capacitive rather than resistive.
But obviously it's down to each individual kind of developer about how they go about using the touch screen, because you can use it in the menus and whatnot, but Zelda doesn't really support it, so yeah. Not much point in kind of tapping it with that, but I do find it surprising. Obviously, because it's cloud based. If I switch on the Wii U, not the Wii U, the Switch now, and it will kind of boot up into kind of a basic menu where it's like news and stuff down the sides, like updates and whatnot, or going back into the game. And if I click back into the game, it's in there pretty much instantly.
Good.
I'm back playing Zelda within literally seconds.
Which is cool.
If that.
I was talking with a few other friends who have got the Switch, and it seems because I know I've joked about you bought a Wii U 1.2.
Yeah.
But everything about it seems like this is what they were aiming for with the Wii U, but they couldn't pull it off.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the menu system on it is really kind of minimalist and kind of very, very quick and swift. I was really impressed with it. Virtually no waiting for like anything, apart from like the eShop, which does take maybe a couple of seconds, but it's still quicker than the Wii U's at the moment. Unfortunately, there isn't any main virtual console on it, but there are Neo Geo games. Couple on there.
Okay.
Download.
Now, do they pay any attention to what you bought previously, or is that not in there yet? Oh, first up, have you not bought any Neo Geo?
I've never bought any Neo Geo games.
First of all, shame on you, sir. Second of all, it would be interesting just to see if it would transfer over, because I'd be a lot happier with the idea.
I know remaining point, like, if you kind of buy, those Nintendo cards.
Oh, yeah.
Those, you can transfer the balance over from those.
Cool. Okay.
Just because for a start, I know I keep harping on about this. They released some Commodore 64 games on the Wii.
Yes.
And of course, so far as I know, they've never bothered with those again on either Wii U or, and of course, you know, Switch. It's only just out, so I'll give it some. You know, I'll give it a lot of breathing room there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just.
I mean, I think the biggest failure so far is software lineup, because apart from Zelda, you've got 1-2 Switch, which I haven't even played yet, even though it's like, you know, even though I've got the cart right there on the table, I've not played it yet because I've just been too involved in Zelda.
You've got Zelda.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need anything else, I don't think, to be fair. Not for a little while.
No. I mean, you've got Mario Kart 8 Deluxe coming in, I think it's the end of April. Then you've got Splatoon 2, I think, was it sometime in May?
And potentially, yeah.
Yeah. I think you've got like the odd title here or there, but it's for now, the stuff's looking, the game's looking a bit lackluster at the moment.
Yes. It's looking very sparse. I noticed on one of the release schedules that Lego City Undercover
is
listed.
Yes.
And I just thought, are they trying to make me not bother buying a Wii U even in its death throes? Because it looks like they've decided that the Wii U was such a, you know, a flop for them.
Hmm.
That pretty much everyone is just throw the game again onto the Switch and hope it works this time.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I kind of hope that they do a Mario Maker for the Switch. And
that would be superb on that screen.
And Hyrule Warriors. I know they won't do Hyrule Warriors because, you know, they're, you know, fully on board with the Fire Emblem Warriors. But, you know, I think...
No, I think it would be really cool to see that ported over.
Mm. And to be honest, I think most of the Wii U library could probably be ported over.
Easily.
But, yeah.
It's just... you know, and this is coming from me. You know what angle I'm coming out with.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to Nintendo stuff. But to me, the only issue I'm having with the Switch is the price.
Mm.
Otherwise, I find the concepts of it very appealing.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of a lot of the games that I would have, you know, if they weren't on Wii U, I would have looked at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't mind the idea of, you know, some of these things being re-released.
Mm.
Because I remember Lego City Undercover got, you know, quite good reviews, and everyone this is a good game. It's just everything seems to be, but it's a pity it's on the Wii U.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
because, you know, the machine didn't sell in the numbers, so, you know.
I mean, I'm a kind of Nintendo supporter. You should know that by now. If you don't, then shame on you. But, I'm kind of looking over there at my collection, and some of the games I feel like I got just to support. They're cheap. So, say, for example, the Wii U version of Mass Effect 3 was cheap at the time, but it was like I bought it, yes, to kind of see about the extra features and whatnot, but also, you know, support Nintendo.
Yeah,
you see, I know what you mean, because I've done that. There were games I bought for my Dreamcast, which I wouldn't have bought if it wasn't for the fact that I want to support the format.
Yeah.
I think it's been unfairly maligned. It deserved to do better. There were games I bought on the GameCube, which I had, you know, a PS2 and an Xbox at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was no real reason why I had to buy them on GameCube, but it's just I liked the format. So I bought them. And, you know, most of the time, that paid off. Every now and again, it was a bit, I made a bit of an error.
But I mean, that,
especially in multi-language games where it's, you know, things like Prince of Persia, I bought on GameCube, and it was like, oh, Jesus, this sound quality on some of the samples is awful.
Oh, blimey.
Because, you know, they'd crunched it all down. And it was still multi-language, so everything was, you know, in a fraction of the space. It would have been otherwise, and it's like, yeah, this is bad. Yeah. It sounds bad. Great game, and it works really well on the controller, and, you know, runs really well on the machine, but it's like, sounds awful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do know precisely what you mean, that, you know, you could have bought them on something else.
Yeah, or just not bothered with them, because, I mean, we've got a Mass Effect 3 on 360 at... Actually, we don't have it on PC, I don't think. No, because that would require me to sign up to Origin and whatnot. But yeah, definitely got it on 360. Mm. But yeah, got it on Wii U as well. I was like, okay.
Cool.
And Batman as well. Arkham City?
Batman, yes. Arkham City, that was another one. They keep on doing this where the to kind of make up for the fact that they're sticking old games on the system, they'll kind of occasionally kind of throw in some, you know, kind of casual extras. Bat suit allowed you to kind of charge up.
It's like Batman's got new trousers in this one, so well then I'll definitely buy it now. It's got trousers.
I'm intrigued by the Switch. I agree, I like the idea behind it and everything, but at the moment for me it's the price and the lack of games.
Absolutely.
That's a really big thing for me at the moment, is there's just not really, apart from Zelda, Mario, I don't really want to get Mario Kart again.
See, I won't mind, you know, getting Mario Kart again, but I'm just hoping that they still include that the upload feature for YouTube.
Yeah.
Because I really liked that for the Wii U version. It was kind of a nice gimmick that kind of, you know, made quite a bit of sense.
They've got this new feature for screenshots and that, a bit like the PS4, where you just press the button, don't you?
Exactly.
And then you're going to have social media will be out in another update soon, apparently, where you can just share it straight to your social media.
Well, I mean, I think I've already shared like a test screenshot to my Facebook. Not sure whether, you know, that... It's meant to have uploaded properly, but I haven't really kind of seen any response on it. Nobody's liked the image or not. So,
well,
that's because we all got together and agreed to be snooty about it.
Okay. So is there anything about Zelda that you want me to answer questions about?
Is it true that it runs smoother on the handheld than it does the big TV?
To be honest, I haven't noticed that big of a difference in terms of kind of performance. I haven't noticed any particular slowdown on either version. Well, either on the TV
or
on the
game. Websites are saying that sometimes it does seem that it's being forced down to 30 frames per second on the big screen.
It is 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
Because, watch that Digital Foundry one, and they mentioned that there were occasions where the Wii U version would, you know, drop down.
Mm.
And then there were occasions where the Wii U version would, you know, would be running fine and the Switch version would drop down.
Mm.
And then they said that if you play it on, you know, as a handheld rather than, you know, hooked up to the dock. Mm-hmm. Remember, of course, that, the handheld version runs at, well, handheld mode, I should say, not version. Runs at 720p, so same as Wii U version. When you put it docked, it's running at 900p. So that's actually quite a bit more, you know.
Oomph.
more oomph required to push things around. And they've said it tends to vary, but there are times where it seems to be it's more of a loading things in rather than it can't cope with detail.
Yeah.
So it's having to swap things out of RAM and then, you know, pull other things in off the cartridge. And, of course, it's a Wii U game that's been ported. And it's been ported well, but you can't expect it to run...
No, that's right.
Absolutely, you know, coded to the, you know, the Switch metal, because it's not. It's been, you know, it's been ported and tweaked. It runs very nice. Both versions run, you know, look very nice. So,
it does look stunning, definitely.
Yeah, it's a nice swan song, and I've been looking at it, and I thought, yeah, some of those dungeons look quite nice. I'm getting that Zelda itch.
See, I mean, I've been playing it most of the weekend. Okay, yes, I have been to work, and I have been out and whatnot, but I would say I've stuck in a fair few hours already. And, you know, I've kind of explored the place, and I haven't encountered my proper first dungeon yet.
Wow. Okay.
Because I've just been kind of exploring and, you know.
Have you got the Hyrule Shield?
No, not yet.
I saw someone mention it's relatively easy to miss first time round. Oh, you know, something like that.
Okay. Well, I'm just...
Yeah, I didn't read any more than that, because I will be playing this at some point.
Put it this way, there's... they said that they wanted to approach this the way that the first Zelda was, which is that you can kind of technically play the dungeons in any order. And so far, it has been so open world that I can, you know, can understand people, you know, people taking their time and kind of missing stuff still.
Hmm.
So, I mean, let's see.
No, just a random thought. Does it have achievements?
Achievements? Well, like a trophy system.
An equivalent, yeah, that kind of thing.
No, it doesn't. As far as I can tell,
I was just curious, because I remember Metroid Prime 3 on the Wii.
Yes, yeah.
Had that. No, the system didn't.
Yeah.
But the game kind of did, and I just found it a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit weird. Although, to be honest, if you think about it, in certain respects, having, like, system achievements is kind of weird. If you know, you kind of publish a game and it's like, oh, well, you have to stick in an achievement system in it. It's like, hey?
Yeah, I mean, you saw that with the early 360 games, where I remember, you know, I got King Kong because it was cheap.
Yeah.
And I think that had five main stages, and the game had five achievements, and they were worth 200 points each, because they clearly couldn't get their head around.
Yeah.
Because they go, what the hell are these? What have we been asked to put these in for? just, you know, just do this. That'll do.
Hmm. So I think just, there's meant to be, I think it's about 100 shrines in Zelda.
Wow.
And considering I earlier on today specifically decided, right, I'm going to unlock areas of the map. And I, so far, after, you know, focusing exclusively on doing that, I've managed to uncover half of Hyrule. Maybe just under half.
And that's with no dungeons.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. That's just kind of going to a place and, the Sheik Towers and kind of, you know, just open it up so that, you know, I get more information about the, you know, local area, as it were.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so there's, I think, 100 shrines and kind of, those are kind of, not necessarily mini dungeons, but they're kind of individual puzzles, as it were.
Have you got a Pona?
See, because I haven't got a pony yet, but I'm a bit confused because I did actually decide to experiment with my amiibos. Nerds After Dark again.
Yeah.
And one of the amiibos did, I think it was a main Link one, did actually give me a Pona for a while.
Right.
Cool.
And I tried Wolf Link as well, and Wolf Link has so many more hearts than I do. I'm still on 4 hearts at the moment. And my Wolf Link has probably around 16, 17.
What?
Cool.
That's quite a step up.
Yeah. But no, it's yeah. I would say that Breath of the Wild is kind of a cross between Zelda, Skyrim, and Far Cry.
Sweet.
And I say Far Cry because of the Sheikah Towers, for one, so you get to your high up location on one of these towers and you start to kind of get more information about kind of the local area and whatnot. Skyrim, just because, you know, everything seems to affect stats and whatnot, so.
Cool.
I like the sound of this.
Yes.
The only downside is that it is still quite expensive. Like, was it $59.99 or $54.99?
Yeah, 60 quid, isn't it?
Yeah. So it is obviously still quite expensive, but I can imagine, put it this way, I've mentioned to Emily, because obviously she's a avid Skyrim player, that she should really have a go on it. And she really likes the look of it. I mean, just get to any one of the hills and you can kind of see out for miles. Now, you grab the hand glider and start gliding, and you get somewhere off in the distance, and there's still miles to go.
See, that's a very Far Cry thing.
Yeah. The map is just that big.
Cool.
So anyway, what have other people been up to?
Shall I go first?
Go for it.
You can indeed.
Well, I have been watching telly things on the telly box.
Any specific telly things?
The first telly thing is I've just finished the second season of a series called *Halt and Catch Fire*. Anyone heard of it?
No.
I've heard it's been mentioned to me, but I've never actually watched it.
Well, it's a fictionalized version of the early 80s computer industry in America. The first season concentrates on an ex-IBM guy who basically looks for a talented coder, but that's been crushed in the industrial machine. Of, you know, people working on software and, you know, running servers for, you know, just, you know, IBM stuff.
Yeah.
And he has the idea of ripping off the IBM PC and making what they call an IBM compatible.
Ooh.
Which there were no, because IBM, you know, so far as they were concerned, they owned this format and they, you know, they wanted to run it. So he contacts this, you know, hardware developer who, you know, he's already had a failed, you know, project and, you know, it crashed and burned. So he's dispirited and he's just, you know, in an office cubicle. And he also hires a young gifted programmer and gets together and with the hardware designer manages to dump the IBM BIOS, which is copyrighted. And his idea is, you know, make a compatible BIOS so they can build a PC and then they can sell it and say it's an IBM PC compatible. IBM don't want anything like this to happen, so they, you know, descend on them. And it's basically, you can't use any of the code that you dumped because that's illegal. And through a series of manipulations, this this tiny little company that's been just sort of, you know, chugging along in a fictional Cardiff Electric gets manoeuvred into, it would be cheaper for them to actually build the IBM PC compatible rather than settle the lawsuit with IBM. So it's a race to get the machine sorted, and they, of course, they, you know, they have to think of a unique selling point, because if it's an IBM compatible, then what, you know, how would you sell that? And you go, well, you know, they decide twice as fast, half the price, and then they decide, you know, luggable, so it's, you know, it's a portable, and it's, you know, using an LCD and things like that, and it's trying to work out how to get it down, you know, below, like, I think saves like £14, which is, you know, still quite heavy, but, you know, it's set in 83 84. And cool. That's pretty much the first season where they do manage to get the computer out, but there's just a soul-crushing moment where their main programmer, who's been working on the BIOS and the operating system, she says, you know, we've got to give it some kind of, you know, personality. Like, you know, because all the coders that they brought in, you know, to help finish this thing before Comdex, which is the big electronic show, they're playing a text adventure called Adventure, which I'm familiar with. I have played Adventure. And yeah, their main programmer has the brainwave. Hang on, why do we give it a little bit of a personality? Like, it can ask you questions and asks you your name. And it will give you, you know, weather reports, and it will get, you know, run the program you want. So it's like, what do you want to do? I want to use a spreadsheet. So it loads a spreadsheet program. But, you know, there's all this thing about industrial espionage, and some of the people who get laid off with, you know, from Cardiff Electric, because everything starts going a bit haywire. They go off and do their own IBM compatible, because, you know, now they know how to do it, they're going to do it. So it's just, you know, rip this personality out to save memory and to save money, so they can actually get, you know, get it cheaper than, you know, this new competitor they had no idea existed at, you know, at Comdex. And there's a soul-crushing moment where, you know, after their big guy, who is like a, you know, a bit of a Steve Jobs character, where he, you know, he's not that technical, but he can get everyone to motivated and believe in a project.
Yeah.
And he just sort of, you know, wanders into one of the Comdex rooms where there's a bunch of nerds from a little company called Xerox who've been working on a new user interface. And they've, you know, they've been working with a little company called Apple.
No, never.
And he just walks in and go, what's that? That's a different looking computer. And it's an original Apple Mac. And he, of course, he boots up and he says, hello, in a little, you know, handwriting, you know, font. Mm. And he's just, fuck. Because, of course, everyone is so concentrated on just doing what IBM's doing, but yeah, cheaper. And then, you know, this company comes in from left field and does something else entirely. And, yeah, at the end, you know, Cardiff just sort of goes, but that's the, you know, it's a fictionalized version of how IBM PC compatibles came to be, mm-hmm, where IBM realized, of course, that if they had, you know, competition in the market and they had other people making hardware, they would benefit, because it would, you know, they were still the big company.
Yeah.
Selling them. So yeah, that's the first season, and it's very good. And then the second season is, after Cardiff has, you know, imploded with, you know, with that, the main programmer goes off and she decides to do online games by dial-up modem. And it's effectively the birth of bulletin board services and companies like Computerv and AOL, where they think they're doing online games for people to play. But it turns out that their community section, where, you know, you can chat with each other as you're playing the game, that's what people are going there for.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, how all that works. And then the big companies start to move in, and they, you know, who aren't computer companies, but they see, you know, well, they, you know, there could be money to be made. And so far as they're concerned, it doesn't matter that there are, you know, there's these small little, you know, really talented companies of, you know, youngsters and nerds doing all these interesting things. They can just rip it off. So if you've got any interest whatsoever in how, you know, the PC, you know, PCs and gaming and online and, you know, how all that came to be in, you know, the 80s. Oh, and it's got a killer soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
So it's got a lot of 80s music, and pleasingly, because Cameron, the, you know, the gifted programmer, is more punk than anything, you get a lot of stuff which is not the typical sort of 80s soundtrack that you get from anything that's set in the 80s.
Okay.
You don't get a lot of pop. You get more sort of punk and ska and, you know, British music.
Nice.
So, yeah, I heartily recommend Halt and Catch Fire. The origin of the series, by the way, comes from the idea that if you tell a computer to run all processes at top priority, then nothing will get swapped out. The computer will lock, it will be incredibly busy, and it will halt and almost literally catch fire because it's, you know, everything's been set to top priority and it just could, you can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
So it was like a hacker thing where, you know, if you wanted to, flip a bird at someone, you could, you know, issue that command.
Yeah.
On a computer, and that would render the computers unusable and possibly break them. Well, break them or bake them.
Yes, yes.
Now, the other thing I've been watching, I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, American Horror Story.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
The latest season, which somehow we completely forgot about, but that meant that we could just watch it 2 or 3 episodes a night, so we just sort of book-setted it. Now, American Horror Story, every season is a different story with different characters, but it uses a lot of the same actors.
Yes.
You know, year to year. Now, the plot line of, I think it's the fifth season, fifth or sixth, I'm not sure. I think fifth, of this one is they decide to take the piss out of those, most haunted.
Ah, yeah.
And various things where they'll have, the dramatic reenactment.
Mm.
And they'll have the person sitting in the studio, and you get, and that's when we heard strange noise coming from the attic. And it will switch to an actor playing out that part.
Yeah.
And that allows it to be quite interesting because you have the original characters, and they're talking just in the studio and, you know, saying, oh, you know, we didn't know what would happen. And then you have the actor versions, in this house that they bought for cheap.
Yeah.
Out in the sticks, rural area. And, you know, weird shit goes down, and it's, I don't want to spoil any of it because it is quite a good, you know, season, but it's, the land that the house was built on is claimed by someone else in the past. And there's a certain time of the year called the Blood Moon where the spirits can, you know, hurt anyone, you know, that they want in the real world rather than just, you know, freaking them out.
Yeah.
So most of the first half of the season is them dealing with, we bought this house because we wanted to get away from, LA after, a little bit of a, traumatic incident where, the husband got beaten up. So, you know, they move out to the sticks and they bid on this house against some, real, hick types, a dodgy family in, a pickup truck.
Is this the one with Lady Gaga in it?
Yes. But she's not in it as, this season as much as she was the last one. And I don't care what, some people say, she was not as bad as, anyone made out in the previous season of this. Yeah, the previous one was American Horror Story Hotel.
Yeah.
This is, what was it? American Horror Story Roanoke, where it's tied to, if you've heard of it, The Lost Colony. No?
No.
Roanoke, which was the first proper attempt at an American colony by Puritans. And the story goes that everyone disappeared.
Oh, right.
Sorry, which one was that again?
Roanoke.
Yeah. That gets featured in Supernatural.
Yes. I thought it might. Yeah, so that's about, you know, about the, you know, the first half of it is, you know, this is all, you know, that happened. And then it turns out that this reality TV series is a huge success for the network. So the bloke who, you know, who's responsible for it, he's got a hit on his hands. So he wants to, you know, he's got this brilliant idea. Why not send the original people and the actors who played them in the reenactments back to the house at that time of year? What could go wrong? As it turns out, quite a lot.
Cool.
But yeah, it's quite different from the previous seasons, and I really liked it. I think it's a bit weird. In my opinion, the last episode in the season is a bit superfluous, and it could have, you know, just done without it, because it seems by about, you know, episode 9, it's, you know, that's it. It's everything's told.
Hmm.
And, you know, the final one just seemed to be, I don't know, making up the numbers. It just seemed, you know, a bit weird that it was there. But I recommend seeing it. And, of course, you don't need to see the previous seasons. Hmm. One of the previous ones is referenced, because the final episode does have a character return.
Ooh.
Who's from, you know, one of the previous ones, I think Asylum.
Oh, yeah, cool.
But it's more confusing than anything, because it's one of the actresses that you've just been watching for the last 9 episodes with a bit, you know, a slight bit of age makeup, and she's supposed to be a completely different character. So it's just, I know what you're trying to do, but it's not quite working for me.
Yeah.
Because this actress who's supposed to be English is now suddenly a, you know, grizzled reporter interviewing some of the other, you know, survivors for, you know. Well, yeah, it's safe to say American Horror Story, you know, people are going to die. Yeah.
And yeah, I expect that.
Yeah, yeah. And those are the two main things that we've been watching.
Cool.
And, of course, I've been watching Supernatural as well.
Yeah.
So, up to date on that.
You're up to date?
Nice one.
I am up to date on Supernatural.
Did you find 12/13 to be a terrible viewing experience? That would be the one with somebody's offspring turning up.
I thought that was shite.
Yay! Everyone thought it was shite.
Didn't you say that it was by?
But it's a Buck Lemming episode. It's two particular writers whose names get abbreviated to that. And they have consistently written some of the least good episodes in the series.
Yeah. When you're dealing with a series and you're a fan of it, you tend to start noticing names crop up. It's just like with I did with, you know, Brennan Braga on, you know, Next Generation.
Hmm.
Generally, those would be a good episode. And, you know, if I was reading the original Star Trek books, there were one or two authors that I knew that, you know, I'm in for a ride, you know, like Peter David, who's still, yes, you know, turning in, you know, good work. And then there were other authors where it would be, I've read your other stuff, and because I'm a Star Trek fan, I'm going to buy the book anyway, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be bad. You know, finish his book a few days later. That was quite bad. So, yeah, I know what you mean with just a certain name comes up on an episode and you think, can you pull this back? And then by the end of the episode, you're thinking, no, couldn't pull that back, could you?
Just going, kind of goes to show just how writers do have a massive impact on, you know, shows.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I still think they are the most important.
Yes.
But yeah, generally I would say I thought this, you know, this season is, you know, quite decent. Although, oh, the Brits.
Oh yes, the Brits. The help.
Fancy a cuppa?
Oh my god. Well, in the last week's episode, Figgy said mate to Dean, and I was just, and the whole sentence was just that it was part
it's,
of.
Is that the one who's supposed to be the you know, their top agent, badass hunter?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It does it. I've just watched the one with. Oh, just. It's got vampires in.
Yeah, that was last week's episode. Yeah.
Yeah, and it just says mate, and he's got. You wouldn't be saying mate. Why the hell? Oh,
a gentleman with that accent would not say it.
Well, it seems there are two accents in our Isles. You're either Cockney, or you're related to the Queen. And that seems to be the, you know, the breadth of their accents, isn't it? But as soon as you said "good mate," I knew exactly the point because it just it was no. It's a bit like if Trump was giving a speech and all of a sudden he just said "chum," everyone would be going, "Why has he said chum? He's never said chum. Why would he say that? That sounded wrong coming out of that goal." Just no.
Anyway, Cookie.
Hello.
What have you been up to?
I have found myself drawn into Horizon Zero Dawn, which was the other.
That's that Zelda ripoff with the girl, isn't it?
I would not say it's a Zelda ripoff. Cheats.
No, neither would I. It's been getting some very good reviews.
Very well-deserved reviews, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been drawn into a game for quite a few months like this, and I've already spent about 6 hours on it, which is the most I've actually spent on a game in ages. The open world is just stunning, beautiful. It's one of the best graphical worlds I've seen on the PS4 yet. It is absolutely stunning. And it follows lead character Aloy, a female hunter, very skilled, who is an outcast and lives in the wilderness. And she's motherless. And she is then has events cascade, which means she has to leave her home and start a quest across the land, meeting the different tribes and putting together the story as to why the world is now overrun by mechanized animals, which is very interesting. Everybody seems a bit scared of technology, but nobody knows why. But Aloy, being quite curious, actually finds some technology helps her. And that is all I'm going to say. But so far, the voice acting, brilliant. You really get to care about Aloy due to the characterisation of the characters early on. And the world is just absolutely stunning. I haven't been able to switch it off yet.
Have you used the photo mode at all?
I have been plaguing everybody on Facebook with it.
I've seen some very nice screenshots.
Oh, yes. The screenshots are amazing. I made my first, what they call, tool neck the other day, which I did get a photo as I managed to climb to the top of this mechanical beast with its head is like the dish off the Enterprise.
Ah, that's the one. Yeah, I know the one you mean, yeah. It's kind of like a giraffe.
Yes, but even bigger than a giraffe.
Yeah, but it's that kind of shape.
Like a dinosaur.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really good. I'm just loving the combat as well. The combat's really nice and fluid, but you do have to strategize how you're going to take on these mechanical monsters. So you get to create traps, you get to do crafting of potions, shock traps, grenade traps, that sort of thing. And armed with a bow and arrow and a spear, which is quite cool.
I've tried, because it's one of those games I'm interested in, and I've been keeping an eye on it since the first trailer at one of the PlayStation events.
Yes.
I thought, well, that looks quite nice. I'll be keeping an eye on that. And yeah, I'm very pleased it seems to have turned out
it's so pretty
well as it has.
Yeah, it's number one this week.
A bit of trivia. Mm-hmm. I heard this week that, of course, it's Guerrilla Games who did the
yes.
The Gun series. But it's their bespoke engine.
Yes.
And Hideo Kojima is using it for whatever that game is called.
Oh, Death something, isn't it?
Death Stranding or Standing or something?
Death Stranding, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, because it's a really beautiful engine. Really managed to push the PS4, which is nice to see. And but it's just a really captivating game, which is really nice. Quite emotional as well. But no, Guerrilla Games have really surprised me, because I do have a soft spot for their Killzone games, although the storylines I've never felt have been that strongly created. You could
say. No, their storylines are basically being this is what happens if you give racist cockneys.
Yes.
High tech.
Absolutely.
Everything goes a bit wrong and they turn into space Nazis.
Whereas this game, so far, the storyline has been a lot more emotional, a lot more captivating, and a lot more. What's the word? Not as straightforward as it first seems, which is quite nice. Shows that it's really sort of taken them from that quite safe level up to increased my awareness of them, my respect for them, definitely.
I'm very pleased that they've managed to break out of the kill zone.
Yeah.
Red Jacket.
You know, this IP is going to be immense. If they do a sequel, I can see it really going down well. So that has basically been what I've been up to.
Okay.
And loving every minute of it.
Emily?
What have I been up to?
Well, just the highlights.
Oh, the highlights. Again, watching more Supernatural. Obviously I'm up to date with the current season, but I've also been rewatching season 4. And I'm noticing a few things at the moment, like just how much Sam was hiding his blood addiction from Dean. Well, I say blood, demon blood addiction. Like, I hadn't quite noticed it so much before, but I'm really picking on it this sort of rewatch.
Can't be the real thing.
I really liked seeing Logan last week whilst I was off.
Cool.
It is... if I was going to rate my top three Fox Marvel movies, it would be Deadpool, Logan, and X-Men First Class currently.
No, that sounds positive.
Oh.
Because that would be my, my choice of them. Although I have not seen Logan yet.
What the hell's that? What is that Amazon thing doing? What? I don't know what I said to
Alexa,
trigger it.
Alexa, cancel.
Oh, God, it's Skynet.
No.
What?
I don't know. I was just talking about X-Men, for fuck's sake.
I'll say, an opportunity. You see, you've unfortunately got one of the Ferengi Alexas, which it just spots an opportunity for commerce.
So
I could sell them some X-Men.
Well done, you've got X-Men Apocalypse coming to you tomorrow. Awesome.
I would rate it up there with The Dark Knight.
Yes.
It's really good. And it's just, as I said after seeing it on Facebook and Twitter, there's no fucking way Spider-Man Homecoming is going to be as good in any way or form. I predict for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 that it will be enjoyable, however predictable, and that Spider-Man will be disappointing. Current movie predictions.
I have no expectations for Spider-Man. I am looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh, and also, I finally got to see Ant-Man. That reminded me.
Yay. Cool.
It was quite decent. It wasn't brilliant, but I do not regret that time.
The one thing about Ant-Man that I do wonder is how it would have turned out if Edgar Wright would still have been, you know, the main force behind it.
I was a little bit surprised to see them still credited at the end.
Mm. It's probably because of the amount of work that he kind of stuck in to the original concept before it kind of he dropped out, and then, you know,
or maybe kind of maybe something it. In the contract. Yeah. Who's to say? But yeah, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't, you know, up there. It wasn't like, oh, you got to see Ant-Man. It was if you stuck something to watch Ant-Man.
Yeah,
I've noticed Mark Kermode doing, you know, big praising of Logan.
Yeah,
yes,
it is a genuinely good movie. It annoyed me though earlier. I sort of stumbled across somebody posting on Facebook about it, saying they'd seen it and they thought it was a horrible vibe. Blah blah blah, that garbage. Blah blah blah, and it's just like. And, like, it's just the same old, same old. I'm like, you clearly haven't been watching comic book movies much because it's very different. And they also seem to be kind of espousing some kind of view of, like, oh, films are violent, blah, blah, these days. I'm just like, Titus, Andronicus, you know, like, give it. I just wouldn't go on about saying stuff today is all terribly violent and that without thinking of the Bard.
Did they, do you think they actually did see Logan?
Apparently they did, but they seemed to have been morally offended by it. It sounded like they went with their partner, who enjoyed it, apparently. I get the feeling that they don't like comic books or comic book movies, so.
Well, then, yeah. Why would you come see?
Yeah, basically.
It's like, oh, just send Paul to review the football match.
Don't send Paul to review the football match. That's a bad idea, but yeah.
Yeah, it was shit and there was no shooting. The storyline was awful. Around. Yeah, it's just
crazy.
No, know your limits. Just, if you know you don't like something, then it's don't a like, so, yeah. And that's not a, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Mm. That's just, if you know specifically you're not going to like a certain, you know, type of, you know, entertainment, don't be that surprised if it doesn't change your mind.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, I think that's all we've got time for. Unless there's any quick questions or anything people want to throw out?
No.
I want to know why the entirety of The Expanse isn't, season 2 isn't available for me to watch right now. Just because they're still broadcasting it in the US, I don't care. I want to be able to watch the entire thing. I don't want to wait. I want
where,
to be somehow.
Where would you be watching it?
Well, it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Ah, yeah.
Also, Dave Internet.
Yeah.
Sorry, was that?
But
Dave Internet meowing?
It's available.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. It is. Dave is having a chat with me, aren't you, Dave? Yeah. There we go. But yeah, if something is available on something like Netflix, then I will very happily, you know, hand over the fiver.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. That's the internet saying, but what about me?
Oh, bless.
Anyway, yeah.
That's what one of our cats is. She's decided that she's going to come in and get a puss. Doesn't matter what I'm doing.
Okay. Mm. Well, I mean,
bless.
That just, you know, cat.
Yeah, that's a cat thing.
Anyway, so it's good night from... Oh, wait, we haven't done... No, that comes after.
Yeah.
So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood and Dave Internet. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer on air and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night for me, Paul, a.k.a. One_Cookie on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter at Paul Blewett. You can find show notes over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're on Twitter, Facebook. We're still on Google Plus?
Somehow.
We're hanging on to Google Plus.
Google Plus is still there, I think.
Yeah.
We're at Nerds Podcast, though.
Oh, yes. On Twitter, we're at Nerds Podcast.
Cool.
And that's it. So good night.
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 Yeah.
Cool.
My Link impression.